Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Scott Smith, and hopefully Kadada Beta join us since we've gotten into silly season has started, and it will officially start here in Georgia tomorrow as we start early voting, and at the end of the week when we finish qualifying our candidate for the May primary. So let me reiterate that early voting starts tomorrow here in Georgia for the presidential preference primaries, which are on March 24th. And we are qualifying candidates this week to be on the ballot for our general primaries, which are in May. And so Kadada's already started working races. I'll probably start working races at the end of the week, beginning of the next week. And so hopefully we'll be able to keep Diamond South and Dirty going during that phase, because I think it's very important that we be able to tell y'all what's going on, particularly since we will be out there in the midst of it, particularly from the local levels in Georgia and being able to see what's going on. But today we want to talk about South Carolina and Super Tuesday and the black vote. And I know I told everybody that I wanted to do a dig in on the black agenda. This show is also a condensed show today. We won't be going to 12. We're probably going to like 11:30 because, again, we're getting ready to go into campaign season, so we got to be able to manage our time a little bit better. So with that being said, I really want to take on that aspect first, because I think it played a major part in the South Carolina vote, how everyone, most of the major candidates have a black plan, a plan that is set aside just for African Americans. African Americans make up, in the 2016 presidential primaries, we made up 61% of the Democratic voting base. So we are a very important demographic to the Democratic Party. And so most candidates will put up a plan. Some of those plans are ambitious, but at the end of the day, are those plans really driving the black voters? You know, we watched, I sat back and I looked through everybody's, from Bernie's to Bloomberg, Buttigieg, Biden. I looked at everybody's, you know, plans on how they were dealing with them. Biden, who was the overall winner last night in South Carolina, really does not have a black plan. However, you can look at stuff, and this was just from the article that, you know, most of the analysis that we're doing on this comes from the Root and their reporting their take on the black agenda of these different candidates. You know, Biden may not necessarily mention African Americans in his plan, but his plan impact us more so than anybody else's direct plan. You can see the actual benefit. You look at Warren has a very definitive plan on what she wants to do for African Americans. You see Buttigieg has his plan. Bloomberg has a plan. Steyer had a plan. Tom Steyer dropped out the race, and he was one of the few that was still left that directly talked about reparation. And obviously, Steyer came in third overall in South Carolina, but he didn't get into the delegate count. So my question to everyone, you can call in and answer this question at 563-999-53560. That's 563-999-3560. But my question is reparations really a make or break for the African community, African American community as a whole? Now, I know members of the ADOS movement, that is a make or break. That is a, for the majority of them, that is a make or break issue. It's like, I'm going to support you or not. It comes down to that. I've, you know, observed members who have said of that movement who have said that, you know, they would just vote down ballot instead of voting in the primaries if there's nobody there with an actual plan to execute reparations or even have a conversation about it. But obviously in South Carolina, that wasn't the sticking point. And that's one of the things that, you know, we need to discuss going into this, because I think there's a generational shift. Now, you have some boomers and some Gen Xers who are, you know, champions for reparations. But I mean, it's mostly been from what the most of the steam from the grassroots effort that has been millennial. Just like most of our political movements right now have been, you know, driven by millennials. But however, when you get to the greatest generation, which is still here and still voting, the boomers and Gen Xers, you see some different dynamics on why they vote the way they vote. And me being a Gen Xer, I kind of understand that. That there are different criteria in our voting patterns than there are for millennials. And I've sat back and I thought about, what is it that drives? I agree with a lot of the things that we need to do in Black America to move ourselves forward, to alleviate some of the problems. But when it comes to dealing with it from a political perspective and looking at it from the lens of a politico, then that starts, there's a lot of problems that part of, there's a lot of obstacles, and we have to start trying to figure out, okay, how does that affect my vote? Because again, in South Carolina, African Americans overwhelmingly voted for Joe Biden. And you had Elizabeth Warren, who damn near came in last. You know her, Amy Klobuchar. And Warren has probably the most detailed plan on how to deal with African Americans. You have Bernie coming second, which Bernie still really does not have a black plan. And this is the thing that really gets me. I mean, I supported Bernie wholeheartedly in 2016. And it's just not because of a lack of a black plan. Because if that was the case, I probably wouldn't be voting for nobody. You know, if it was just really about me and me and my experience as an African American. But that's one of my issues. There were certain things that were there that we knew were problematic coming out of 2016, and those things still are issues. But I'll go back to that later. We, as a voting bloc, have been, what's the word I want to use? Because I really hate the word pander. But I guess it is really the most appropriate word in this situation, too. The African-American voting bloc is pandered to every 2 years. Not every four, every two. Whether it's the presidential election or it's the midterms, or in Georgia, as we like to call the midterms, the gubernatorial cycle. Because that's because Georgia, for us, that's what exactly it is. It's about the governor's race. Midterms is about the governor's race here. And we watch everybody come out and want to show how in touch they are with the African-American experience. And I don't even think African-American candidates are sometimes in touch with the African-American experience. Because this is the thing. The most, to me, the most important issue to African-American voters, and this is my opinion, and you know, y'all are more than welcome to come and disagree with me or agree with me. I'll tell you the number again, 563-999-3560. But in my opinion, the most important issue to the African-American voter is survival. Survival. And somebody's probably sitting there saying, Scott, what you mean by survival? Because we sit back and we talk about, you know, economic development, criminal justice reform, closing the wealth gap, building wealth. We talk about all of these things, but at the end of the day, it's making it another 4 years in America. I want to let that sink in, because I think that's how we vote every single cycle. It's how do we survive another 4 years, and we do that in two-year increments. Because I think, particularly amongst boomers and older Gen Xers, see, the boomers grew up in the era of civil rights. That's where they cut their teeth. They were teenagers. And young adults, as we broke down the walls of segregation, and Gen Xers was raised by people who had these attitudes toward race that was like, okay, white people will give you something, then they make it hard as hell for you to use it. So we're going to look and see who's going to give us the best opportunity to move forward under the circumstances in which we live in. Black voters are used in that cohort are usually very pragmatic. Yeah, we want the same stuff everybody else wants, but are we going to get it? And if you give it to us, how hard is it going to be for us to obtain it? What are going to be the loopholes? What loops I got to jump through? You know, how hard of a climb is this going to be? And in 2020, I think the biggest thing is that we see the existential threat being the present president of the United States, Donald J. Trump. Because these first 4 years, there has been a resistance, and we've held off some things we've not been able to hold off. You know, we don't necessarily, from my opinion, I don't think that Trump has directly came for us yet, but that's a calculated move. It's a wait and see. What can I do to everybody else before I go after them? And I think we see that. So it comes to the point of not just being able to get Democrats elected, up and down the ballot, but can we get rid of that influence? And then can we do something about that influence that, because there's already damage been made, because there's been people who've been elected to Congress who are followers of his. There are people who've come out and supported his policies and have dug in, and we've elected governors who espouse his views. So first thing is get rid of him and then dismantling the rest of that. That's where the majority of African Americans are going. Is how do we stop the president, get him out of the White House, then how do we dismantle the damage that has been done, then move forward? And in a lot of cases, when you listen to millennials, they're like, we're going to jump from here to there, get rid of Trump, move forward. But there has to be some dismantling of the shit that he's already done just even be able to move forward. He still has the whole of the Senate. So that means that anything else that the House does matters. It doesn't matter because we won't get shit passed. So it then comes to the point, okay, who do we have at the top of our ticket that will allow us to take the seats that we can gain during this cycle? And we already fighting an uphill battle because we have a failed impeachment process. We impeached him, but we couldn't convict him. So that has emboldened him, and he's moving a little harder and a little faster than he was beforehand. And I don't think that a lot of folks in America realize that the Republic has remained stable because of the African-American vote. I think we unconsciously are the bulkheads of the Republic. We keep everything just as stable. And even on the keel, so that we can continue to move forward. I mean, and if you agree with me or disagree with me, you know, I know we was late getting this show up for everybody to see what we were going to be talking about, but y'all have been on my social media page for the last doggone couple of days coming at me. So I feel at this point, hey, this is your chance to talk to me directly, and I'm going to give you an answer. So why don't you come on in here and talk to me and tell me what you're going to do. Tell me what you feel. And that number is 563-999-3560. Because, I mean, this is a time that we need to really take into account what's really going on. I mean, seriously. I popped up my top three, my top five from last week, and y'all went in, but y'all quiet this month? I mean, do y'all really, what is it y'all really want? Y'all want me to explain my top five, my top three? I'm going to get to that. But we still need to have a conversation on why, particularly if you're an African American, why are you voting the way that you are voting? Who are you supporting, and why are you supporting that individual? Because at the end of the day, collectively, we are going to have an effect on who is the Democratic nominee and who is the president of the United States of America in ways that no other group has. So, for me, again, it's about beating Trump. Nothing else matters to me right now. It's beating Trump. Because we can't get anything done with him there. That puts us waiting another 4 years even have a chance at making the change we need to make to move the agenda. And we don't know what kind of damage can be done in the next 4 years. We don't. How many more Supreme Court justices will he be able to appoint that have conservative leanings, who are not as sympathetic to the cause of civil rights, who are not as sympathetic to the cause of gender equality, who just will dismantle all of the gains we've made just in the last 20 years. So the question is posed again: who are you voting for? Why are you voting for them? And if you're an African American, you know, how does the person that you look, you know, move Black America? I mean, it's really deep and heavy lift that we are asking for, that people are pushing toward us. And we have serious conversations that we need to have about how we're going to move this country forward with what we have in terms of who's going to do best for our country. So again, you know, the number's 563-999-3560. We're talking about, you know, the South Carolina vote, Super Tuesday, and in particular, how the Black vote is going to determine what we're going to do in these next couple of days, the next couple of weeks. It's imperative that we have these conversations. Because our future is at stake. You know, are we ready for a democratic socialist? Do we still need third way Democrats? Do we need, you know, I've heard good friend of mine, former African-American outreach director for Bernie, Marcus Ferreira, told us that, hey, we need to let neoliberalism go. And I kind of agree with that. I'm not a neoliberal, never have been. I can always consider myself a member of the Warren wing of the Democratic Party. And my progressivism has been a part of who I am even before I became a Democrat. And I don't think that everybody who calls themselves a progressive in this day and age is really truly a progressive. I think I got neoliberals who are scared to wear their label on their chest. I got democratic socialists who see this as the way to get into the party. And I have nothing against any of our factions, because as a member of the Democratic Party, I believe in a big tent. Everybody know that I'm all about unity. But unity means that we have a common, that we're looking for a common thread. That's what brings people together. You got, you know, in the human body, you have hands and toes and fingers and whatnot, and they are all connected to the spine and the brain, which is a common entity. We got a caller. Let's see what we call. Good morning, caller.
Hey, good morning.
You on Downtown 30.
Hey, how are you? We're all? I don't know where you guys are in the conversation, but I just want to, you know, want to add some value. I saw some information that you guys are talking about South Carolina and all that. But I just really want to say, in my honest opinion, what South Carolina showed us, just like I thought, we have an older Black problem. You know, it's like, I'm not a fan of this establishment politics that we as black people are so gullible. You know, it's like we just go along to get along with anything that come our way. I don't see anything tangible Joe Biden has done for black folk over the past 30, 40 years, but yet he's the front runner as the person to get out of vote because he worked side by side with the first black president who still didn't do anything tangible for black folk. But yet, you know, so we got an older black problem. It's not younger black folk. It's older black people.
Right,
so that's
right.
That's kind of my thing. But, you know, but it also shows the
– go ahead. And I kind of talked about it earlier that you got, you know, that most of the Biden supporters will be what's left of the greatest generation because they're still here. They're still voting. Boomers and older Gen Xers. Because we all kind of, I think, share a view of, like I was saying earlier, the boomers actually dealt with the vestiges of the civil rights movement. They were teenagers, they were young adults, and they then raised their children with the ideas that they came out of that movement with. And I seriously think, I don't think that people don't want to move forward. I think that African Americans, black people in America in general, vote, that particular cohort votes for survival, not necessarily to move the ball forward. They know white people are going to white.
Yeah.
And so who's going to do the least amount of damage? Or who's going to allow us to be able to survive another 4 years in this condition till we finally get somebody who can do what needs to be done? And I think that's why they vote the way they vote.
That's the issue. See, that's the issue. So that's the issue, and it's also the solution. The issue is we wait for somebody to be given to us. Now, even with Obama,
right.
Okay? Now, Obama was given to us. We didn't go out here and pick Obama, okay? Like, so the moment black people get behind a candidate and say, hey, this is who we as black people want, you know, then the entire dynamics will change up. But until then, we keep getting thrown these people, and we keep and it shows, you know, like now we got to go with Joe Biden because that's who was thrown our way instead of us being the most powerful voting bloc in the entire country coming together saying, hey, we're gonna put our own person up. If you don't listen to who we say we want, then we ain't gonna be no president. And so, you know, that's how this thing has to be treated. And so with that, the real solution is creating a black party. The Democratic Party don't belong to us. It wasn't ours. It ain't for us. But we need a party specifically for black people. Somebody, because what's happening too, black issues are continuously being shielded out of conversation. Like, we ain't hear Joe Biden talking about reparations. We don't hear Joe Biden talking about HBCUs. We don't hear Joe Biden talking about investing in communities of color, you know, redlining, all this other kind of stuff. But that's who we going with. So if we put up a candidate who we say, just like, you know, we just got to put up somebody that we say that who ideas that we want. This is what we want. You talking about this stuff, and we'll get behind. And I promise you, that person will win the presidency. We make up 60%. It's like we was enthused to go out to vote for Obama. Again, somebody who was given to us, we'll be even more enthused to go and vote for somebody that we put up ourselves. Thanks so much for allowing me to be a part of the conversation.
Before you leave, I want to ask you a question. You know, so this is we looked at Iowa, we looked at New Hampshire, and our first complaint was that, okay, these are two places that are overwhelmingly white. They both are 90% populations when it comes to white. Okay, and then we had Nevada, and Nevada went, you know, was highly affected by the Latino vote, so everybody was looking at South Carolina. So can we, you know, could we say that, you know, South Carolina just went 50, you know, right at 50%, just a little bit below for Joe Biden. The majority of that was the African-American vote. Could you say that, you know, a portion of our population has given us Joe Biden, saying this is who the staff, the elders have said this is who we're voting for?
Oh, yeah,
you
absolutely.
Know,
and it's, so it's a twofold thing. So it's the elders and the DNC. So you got the DNC. They don't want Bernie. Hell, Bernie could very well be the Democratic nominee. But, you know, when you got an actual, when you got the whole party doing everything they can, like, for instance,
Bloomberg. There was no way Bloomberg should have been in a freaking debate at all. Okay, this man didn't meet any qualifications to be in a debate, but because the DNC don't want Bernie, they wanted anybody except Bernie to have side in the debate.
Right.
And so, you know, that is also the biggest thing. So we got the elder black people that's out here for Joe Biden, and you got also the Democratic Party, and that's like the party itself. That's the problem, too. Again, the party. The party, instead of it just allowing the process to work out, the party likes to finagle into the actual business itself, and they try to tell us who the nominee is going to be. So it's not – so it's also – while it's on the elders, it's more so also on the party itself. And that's where the real fight is. Okay. That's why I say black people need our own party, because we're also trying to fight an establishment within the party itself.
So I got a twofold. So I got a twofold follow up on that. So if Biden is the one that the party is pushing us toward, and we got Bernie over here who should be possibly the nominee, the compromise to me would be Elizabeth Warren. So why do you think I'm assuming because I can hear your dialect that you're an African American man. So
yes,
So my question is, why we are not compromising on Elizabeth Warren, who actually has detailed plans about how she will deal with everything, including African American.
Well, so my choice was Tom Steyer.
Both.
And I could Tom Steyer
both.
Really outlined a detailed plan as to how to deal with black people, and when, like, he broke it down to the T. But, you know,
right. But
black people, we don't want to listen to real, like, it's like we also have a problem with genuine white people that's here to help. Now, Elizabeth Warren. So Elizabeth Warren is also a genuine white woman who's here to help us. But, you know, she's so genuine that it really scares black people away from her, you know. And she is the alternative. She's the alternative to both Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders. But she also lacks a black problem herself. So now Elizabeth Warren did a whole thing in the South a couple of months ago, because I got a chance to meet her when she came to Birmingham, Alabama. But when it comes to Elizabeth Warren, all these candidates can't come around expecting black people to vote for them just because they're running for president. You got to put work in with black voters. Like, you
right.
know, even look at, again, going back to Bernie. Bernie is struggling with black voters because over the past 3 years, Bernie has done nothing to engage with black voters. You know, like,
exactly.
Bernie could have easily won South Carolina on last evening, okay, if he wanted to. They didn't want to.
Right. Again, that's one of the issues I had. And I was feeling the burn in 2016. And
I worked for Bernie in 2016, but I didn't do it this time.
You know, and my thing has been is that, whoa, bruh, you've been known since the end of last time that you had a black problem. You know, if you go, it's just like playing football. You lose a game, you go back and watch the film. You see that you got a problem on the left side of your line. You go over, you shore that up. You change, and particularly if you're finna play the same again. You watch the film.
Yep.
You go see when you play them, and you fix the stuff that you did wrong the last time. It was like, okay, I still got a great message. We're gonna get rid of the 1%. And this is my one thing that comes with that one situation. And then we can go back. Now, for me, as an African-American man, social does not appeal to me because I want to get the bag. Okay? I want the bag. I want to build wealth. I don't have no problem with creating black billionaires. Because I feel like black billionaire would do better than any billionaire on the planet, because we will at least give back.
Black women billionaires.
I don't think that the few black billionaires we have on the planet are exploitative as any of the other billionaires on the planet.
No,
so
I certainly agree.
Yeah, I think that, you know, entrepreneurship is our way and path to freedom. I don't necessarily, and I'm a blue-collar worker, you know. I do politics, you know, as a politico here in Georgia, but it doesn't, one, again, it doesn't pay enough for me, because I particularly like local races. I'm not trying to do presidential, not trying to do that. I'm trying to help candidates get elected on the local level. So that means I have to maintain a regular job. And I've chosen to stay in manufacturing. One place you can make some money still and decently and live. So I work around the working class people all every day. I'm one of them. So I know at the end of the day, I want to be free. And the best way for me to get off that quote-unquote plantation is for me to have my own. And socialism requires workers,
also,
and I don't.
But now check this out too, though. So now, all right. So I believe in capitalists. Okay. So I will label myself a capitalistic socialist because I also believe in the fundamentals of socialism. But I also believe and recognize that we live in a country of capitalism. And, you know, like, I'm very much different. I'm 26 years old, but I don't like to get out and actually go work every day. I'd much rather go pay somebody to be able to go out and do, you know, things that needs to be done. So I start businesses where I can do just that, hire people to, you know, help me make money. Because that's just me. Like, I want to make money doing the least amount of work. But we have to recognize that that exists. And two, that is like everybody ain't in tune with this whole democratic socialism thing. Like, I don't even know what it means to be what is a democratic socialist? Like that, like what is that? Like, you know, Bernie just made up a term and is taking it and run with it. But when you look at it, like, Bernie is that, like, his plan, like, so we got to look at cost and money and all this stuff. And then you got to look at rhetoric. So all this stuff that Bernie is saying, it sounds good. And I hate being, you know, fed propaganda. Like, literally, probably 2/3 of the things that Bernie is proposing, he will not be able to accomplish. You know, just simple as that. And especially, go ahead.
I was watching State of the Union with Jake Tapper this morning on CNN, and that was one of the things that Vice President Biden said, is that, you know, he said, I don't think Americans want a revolution. I think they want results. He said, and the thing is that, and I think that is true, particularly for African Americans, that if you're going to go into office, give me something that I think you can do.
Right. And that's all it comes down to. Like, don't just tell me, you know, oh, you're going to give me free school. Like, okay, that don't really benefit black people because half of our poor communities ain't going to college anyway. So, you know, like, what that's going to do for us? You know, free health care, okay? Like, what also is that going to do? Most poor communities already have access to Medicaid and things like that. So next, you know, so it's like the stuff that he's saying doesn't really resonate with poor black people. You know, now, like, you got some college-going students, like, you know, because so 2016, I was the director of HBCU outreach for the state of Alabama. My job was to go around the entire state to every HBCU here and rally up black kids around Bernie Sanders. And we did just that. But, you know, those are the only black people that are interested in Bernie Sanders, those that attend school. You know, outside of that, no other black people really support him. And it's also, like, you know, we really can't fault Bernie for that because he is from Vermont, where there's less than, like, 3% black people in the entire state. Is just like Iowa, and the whole state only has 628,000 people in the entire state. They don't even have a million people in the whole state. So, you know, that's also a factor. But, like, I think, you know, it's time for something new. Like, Pete Buttigieg is not it. You know, black people ain't finna vote for a gay man run for president. That's just, you know, simply not gonna happen. But he does cater to the moderate base of the Democratic Party. So he is, in a sense, Obama. And
let me ask you a question about Pete, because that's interesting that you say that, because you quiet as kept. That is the reason. You can talk about, you know, his record with black people in South Bend, Indiana, this, that, and other. I don't think that cops to why black folks ain't voting for him. I think that's just what we say, because at the end of the day, I think it is exactly what you said, is that he's gay. So if Pete was a gay man, if Pete was not a gay man, do you think that he would
become
a lot more
of a nominee? Yes. If Pete was not a gay man, he would be a Democratic nominee.
Because, you know, I have a top three. And Pete is at the bottom of it. And one of the reasons that I'm a vet. So my thing is, hey, he's Navy, I'm Navy. It's like, shit, mate, go get this. But I keep hearing from other people, you know, it's like, you know, I don't know, he stops being da-da-da. And finally, it would always come up in the conversation, you know, I don't know if, you know, him having a husband and all. I don't know if I'm ready for a first man in the White House with another man and, you know.
Yeah, so let me break down the whole Pete thing.
And let my audience understand this. I'm not homophobic. I'm very much an LGBTQ ally. I, you know, do what you feel like you want to do. I'm all about equality for everybody. But we're just stating the facts of what's going on in our community.
Yeah, stating the facts. You know? Yeah. And so let me break down the Pete thing to you really quick. Really quick, the whole Pete thing. So, all right, so Pete is, again, essentially the same person as Barack Obama, okay? Now, but Pete he's a moderate. He, you know, well-dressed, well-kept, you know, the only thing he take off during his speech is his jacket, you know, like he's here to have a conversation. He's ready to talk. He's very articulate. He's young. He's charismatic. He reminds me of Barack Obama, a little JFK, you know, that's just him. But his biggest issue, and it has nothing to do with South Bend. Yeah, like you have to Google South Bend, Indiana, and, you know, Pete Buttigieg and black people in order to know what he didn't do for black people in South Bend. So it ain't even that necessarily. You know, you have to be involved in politics to know that he didn't do anything for black people in South Bend. That ain't what's the real conversation. The number one thing that comes down to older black voters is that he's gay. You know, like I hear it all the time. I have my political friends that we sit and talk all day about, you know, the national politics. That's what we do. And, you know, and our conversation around Pete, everything that I hear, oh, no, you know, he's gay. He's kissing his husband, all this kind of stuff. You know, that's the number one thing, because black people, you know, the same black party that voted for Barack Obama could have been the same black party to vote for Pete Buttigieg. Again, they're the same person, but Pete Buttigieg just so happens to be a gay man in America that black voters are not willing to except just yet, you know, and so that's it.
So let's talk about the idea of a black party, because see, now I feel you on that one, but then I go to looking at the fact that, you know, black people are what, 13-15% of American population,
and 13% of America's population, but we make up 60% of the Democratic Party,
right? So it seems that our power comes in by the coalitions that we've made. And if we were to take and break off by ourselves, we would not, only things we could hold would probably be either congressional seats and state legislative seats and stuff down ballot. I don't see us having a national presence outside of, you know, particularly urban areas without having a larger coalition to deal with. Only way a black party would survive in America, in my opinion, if we had a parliamentary system in which we had governments formed of coalition, and we would have enough of a stranglehold on the urban areas to make that happen. But in the American presidential system, we'll go the way of the Liberal Party.
So here's the thing, okay? And it's like, when I say black party, I don't mean an actual, you know, like, oh, you have Democrat, you have Republican, and then you have this black party. I mean, we create have different factions of, it's like you have different factions of the Republican Party. You got the GOP, you got the Tea Party, you know, you got, you know, these different factions within this one party. It could be the same way, you know, like in the Democrats, you have Yellow Dog Democrats, you know, you have, you know, different kind of Democrats, and so within the Democratic Party. And I think, you know,
our African American caucuses, our black caucuses in these different state parties need to do a little bit better job of coalescing and making decisions as a group instead of just being there as title holders and whatnot. Is that what I'm getting
at? We don't make it a state thing. We make it a national thing because, right. Like, you know, and right. Because, all right, so. And, you know, and that's where our focus is. Like, we don't have an issue. Like, if black people were to start going to different cities and actually organizing, we could take things back, you know, no matter how we wanted to, if we just started going to organize. And so I've led movements. I led, you know, operations. I led an operation here in Alabama where I employed over 600 people and with two offices where we went out to knock on every black door in Jefferson County, the largest county in Alabama, in addition to the staff we had all over the state in the top five cities, largest cities in the state. And that is how we got Doug Jones. We had 98% of black women and 93% of black men to vote for Doug Jones in record numbers, okay? And that is how we got Doug Jones, and because we did that operation. But if we were to, as black people, because that was a coalition, if we were to take that same kind of organizing skills to every place where black people were running in heavily black districts where they could really win, then we could win, you know, on a congressional level. We could win these, you know, down ballot races, but more importantly, we could win the presidency. All we got to do is start, you know, putting together an actual faction of the Democratic Party that deal specifically with black voters. Stop waiting on them to tell us what we need to do or to rely on them to help us. We should be out here trying to do the work ourselves. So if we travel all across this country organizing in black communities, we wouldn't be unstoppable. Just like we make up only 13%, but we spend more money than anybody else in this country, we the same 13% could have a larger voice in voting than anybody else in this country. And it is evident because that's how we got Barack Obama. It took white people needing to vote. It took white people, the small majority of them, minority of them in the Democratic Party, to vote with the overwhelming majority of the 60% black base, and that's how we got Obama. Like, you know, so that has to be done everywhere. And because the white people know we're going to get whoever we put up as a candidate. If we make up 60% of the electorate, whoever this 60% put up, we're going to get at least a 20, 25, 30% of the white vote.
Right. I'm glad that you clarified that, because, I mean, that is the way it needs to operate. You know, it needs to be, but I, as a member of the party here in Georgia, and I'm chairman of county affairs for the Democratic Party here. And I watch how we organize. I watch how we organize. You know, you got factions inside of the black community that we need to take and have some conversations on, how we need to unify on that level, because we got, you know, we got African Americans. And then we got black folk. And people like, what's the difference? Oh, there's some differences. Then you got African Americans split down, because now you have the ADOS movement, who has basically stated, hey, you know, if you're an American descendant of slavery, that we need to be looking out for ourselves. And that's kind of alienated the African and Caribbean community toward us, in which, you know, everybody in America looks at all of us the same. We black. Regardless of what your last name is, what your accent sounds like, at the end of the day, when they see you coming, they see black folk coming. So, I mean, at some point in time, we need to have a conversation amongst our factions inside. Then you get, again, like you said, we got our older people, our younger people. We got our working class, you know, our academics. We need to have a conclave like they did back in the early 1900s to get this thing figured out. We need to have like another Atlanta convention where we get our bows down, and we need to come up with. We got another call I'm going to add into the conversation. Let's get this other call in.
Okay.
Caller, welcome to Down South and Dirty.
Hey, well, what's up, y'all? What's going on?
We're having a good conversation here this morning. We were just now breaking down how, if we're going to have a black versus a faction inside of the Democratic Party, how do we bring everybody who falls under the black umbrella together? So what do you have to add to the conversation?
I don't think you can have a black faction because the ideological divide between different generations of black folks in the Democratic Party is so different. Like, it's just so different. While most black folks vote Democrat, we are not a monolith politically. And you've got a very far left faction of younger black folks, and you've got more of a mainstream Democratic who's more similar to the traditional African American base. And then you've got you can't stereotype older black folks because not all older black folks are conservative. You've got a left wing group of black folks who are older.
Right.
And I think that's hard to do when you know, we vote so differently. You've got a group of black. What I find nationwide is with folks who are millennials who are still going nuts over black people getting elected. I live in DeKalb County, so I know that black folks being elected ain't necessarily gonna be a big deal for black people. It ain't necessarily gonna do a lot for us. And we all know that all skin folk ain't kin folk. So we got to get on the same page first that just because somebody our skin color is getting elected or representing us doesn't mean they're doing a lot for us. And so I think there's a segment who understands that, but I still think there's a segment who thinks that, oh, if I got a charismatic black candidate, I'm going to vote for them no matter what, even if they're going to do harm to me. So I don't know. I think it's very, very, very difficult to have a black faction of the party. Now, you can have caucuses like the Black Caucus, and then the Black Caucus is very wide. You know, you've got your left wing of the Black Caucus. You got your Ilhan Omar and Ayanna Pressley. And then you've got your typical kind of center left person. And then you've got even a conservative, a more Democratic conservative group in the Black Caucus, like your Sanford Bishops. I don't know. I think, and what are we going to unite around besides skin color? That's the question. What are we going to unite around?
We think that, you know, a black party may be difficult, and also when we ask what are we going to unite around other than skin color, well, to have a black party, the only thing that we need to unite around is skin color. And I get it, because I oftentimes preach all black people are, just because you're black doesn't mean you're good for black people. I deal with that every single day here in Birmingham, you know, where we have black leaders who fail black people every single day. But our job, our first job is to organize a black party. And so the way we do that is to remind everybody, because the one thing that we have in common outside of anything else is our skin color. Before we get to ideology, before we get to what you believe, what I believe, the first thing that we can agree on is that we are black. So if we were to begin organizing people around that notion that we need something specifically for us as black people. Now, just exactly what that looked like, let's not worry about that just yet. Let us focus on getting black people together. And once we are together in a black party, then we can create the different caucuses where older black people could have their voice, and, you know, you millennials can have their voice. But at the very least, we need to organize around us being black. And when we think that that is a problem, that's really, I believe, is one of the solutions, because on the other side, so when you look at far right groups, outside of their ideologies, the only thing that they're organizing each other around is their heritage. Oh, we are white, and we need to keep it that way. So if they are doing that, why aren't we doing it the same way on the other side in a more strategic way aimed at actually voting and turning people out to the polls around us being black? I think that's the very first thing. Now, again, the ideology, what you believe, you know, and in this, you know, you believe in that. We're not here. We can't deal with that first. Our job ain't to organize around ideology. And I think that's where we've gone wrong is organizing around ideology and more, instead of organizing on what does the majority of us have in common, what's the most common denominator amongst everybody here? And that would be that we're black. And once you have your most common denominator, then you can divide everything else out from that.
But that's the thing, like, what's the point of having black power if you're going to do the same thing white folks do? And that's, I've seen it. DeKalb County is pretty much for decades been the black party. What has it done for black DeKalb County? And that's, I've seen it in real life. I've seen the black party exist essentially as the Democratic Party, and it hasn't done much for the lesser of our community. They haven't gotten better off.
Yeah, that's because they had the wrong people put it together. I think with the right group of people, you know, young people, younger people, older people, kind of organizing this thing together, we know a lot. We personally, between the three of us, I'm certain we know at least close to 100 other young black millennials, older people who are very bright, who are very dedicated to making something like a black party happen and organizing. And again, if we organize it in the right way, we can trickle it down. Just like the local parties take their direction from the National Democratic Party, okay, the National Black Party can give direction to its local chapters. This is what you all need to be worried, you know, focused on. We're result driven. You know, I do things based upon result, not reaction. And so, you know, and I believe in creating systems to find out ways that we can strategically come up with the results that we need in order to make whatever we're looking, whatever theory we're trying to test work. And that, you know, and we can do it. We can certainly do it.
So
there's too many powerful, smart black people to do so.
We talked, you know, John, I heard him just sit there and say that, you know, why would we do what the white people are going to do? You know, I heard that, but, you know, and my answer to that is that power is power. Power is going to do what power does. And, you know, if you look over things from a historical point of view, and when I'm talking about historical, I ain't talking about the 200-something-odd years of America. I'm talking about, when I'm talking about history, I'm talking about human history. If you look at nation states and tribes and groups of people who have done things that they have put their mark on history to the point that we remember them thousands of years later, they didn't worry about the evil that the people did with them through their mechanisms. They worried about what mechanisms could they put together to defeat that evil. And even if it looked like what they did, if it was successful and got them to the goals that they needed to achieve for their people to be successful and continue to survive, that's what they did. Now,
yes,
I'm not
absolutely
saying that black people need to come together. I'm not saying black people need to come together and oppress another group of people. Not saying that under no circumstances. But what I am saying is that we need to come together and understand that we have a common culture. We have common ancestry. We done some things here in America that make us different. And that's why earlier on I brought up the whole idea of, you know, there's other movements in the black diaspora, in the African diaspora, who is attempting to separate themselves off. But at the end of the day, you know, we're all here in America now. Regardless if you're a descendant of slavery, regardless if you're Nigerian, regardless if you are Afro-Latino, regardless of where you're from, we are in America today, and everybody looks at us and see you coming, you are a black person. Regardless of where you started out at, you're black.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have to work to make this happen. And like you said, then we can sit down and at the table together and say, okay, this is our issue. This is what we want. Because I believe if we stop each other and we come to the table and say, okay, because I seriously believe that if you got Caribbeans and Africans and American descendants of slavery at the table, most of the Africans and Caribbeans would be like, look, y'all can get reparations. We got you. We understand that we shouldn't have a part of this because we weren't here. But we want to help y'all get there because all the tide rises all boats. You know what I'm saying?
Please, all of us.
That would be the outcome. But we believe that everybody has an agenda against the other group. We need to say that that needs to actually, like you said, an organization. We need to organize to the point that we need to have something similar to the debate that DuBose and Booker T. Washington had at the Cotton Affair thing back in the early 1900s. We need to decide what direction that Black America is going to go into in the 21st century. We hadn't had that conversation.
Absolutely.
We still
absolutely
those ideas.
And see, also, I think, you know, too, the larger thing that we have to recognize. So I'm not a fan of United States of America. I don't like being here, and I have a 10-year plan on and being in Africa for the rest of my life. You know, until I'm coming back here for work. But outside of that, but I think the one thing that we have to recognize here is that we are here in America as Black people. We were here. We were brought here. We have to deal with it. But one thing that has worked for white people in America is that they have created systems that, you know, that are still in effect today that are the reason that we are continuously being treated and are in the same conditions we are today as we were when we originally were brought here. And so I think that one thing that we really the main focus on while being in America is to change the system. We need to create our own systems. And the only way we'll create our own systems is to quit trying to be a part of their system, but focus on, you know, building our own systems. Because as long as we live in the systems that they created, when they make up 70% of this population, we'll never be able to beat their systems. You know, but what we can do is build our very own systems within their systems. And again, I don't see us being able to build a system without organizing around Black people being Black people and then talking about the fundamental differences that we have that we can, you know, that we can then start going back to, because all communities are different. Every community don't have the same issue. And so, but again, the one thing that we all have in common is that we are Black. So let us organize around that. And if we, and again, it could work. I think it really could work. And I want to see it work. And I say, let's do it.
Here's my thing. In order for this to be done correctly, it has to be done in a very disruptive, kind of radical manner, in my opinion, because Black power has existed in this country for a long time. And in most situations of Black power, Black people are also being oppressed in the masses, and I see it. I see it every day here in Metro Atlanta, here in DeKalb County. You see it in Baltimore, you see it in Detroit, in Memphis. Black power oppresses Black people because they don't reform from the system they were in before. They continue that system, and so for us to form a Black party, it has to be under the mandate of systemic change. We have to stand for a systemic change. And if we're going to lift Black people, because otherwise we're just going to be like another version of the Black Democratic machine of Memphis, of DeKalb County.
No, Detroit, that's not what we will be. That's not what we'll be. No, that's not what this movement will be.
So my question would be, if we was to do this and we know we had to do systemic change, just what would be, both of you guys, give me the top three things that you would change about how we do our politics, how we govern, to make that difference be seen immediately?
So I think the first thing we do is, I'm a radical. So I think I have a very radical approach to almost anything that I do. And I think the way that we go about doing things is going inside and kicking the door in and, you know, forcing our way to the table and kicking them out where they don't need to be in position. And so the very first thing is we have to go in. And again, this is a Black problem. Okay. This is like, we have to go in after each other. So my top thing would be to go in and move out these Black people that are not doing anything for Black people. So if you're a Black person in power, we need to organize around that first so that we can go in and get these people unelected and get real people elected. And then secondly, we kind of start looking at organizing everywhere around the entire nation, black people all across the nation. And then thirdly, we focus on the issues. I think that's more importantly. And as you know, instead of even with politics, we focus more so on the candidate and not the issues. If we find out that if our issues will always align with somebody out there, you know, like I believe in, again, like reparations, I believe in, you know, investing money in black communities. And I felt Tom Steyer was the person that, you know, talked the best game about that for me. And that's who what I went with. So, you know, but it has to be issue-based. And once we start rallying around the issues, the person will come automatically, or the people will come automatically.
Okay. John?
I mean, I think can you repeat the question?
Okay. If we were going to take and reorganize or organize a black, quote-unquote, black party or black faction inside of the Democratic Party, what would be the first, and we say we don't want to continue to do what we've been doing, what are the top three things you would do coming out the door to change or eliminate from our processes and the things that we do now to show people that we are a different group? What would you change, the top three things?
Well, the first thing would be a radical solution to wealth gap. It would be a advocacy, a relentless advocacy for bringing resources, wealth to the black community. It doesn't, you know, I this might sound off the wall, but I think America has so much forest land. I think that if you gave black folks forest land, it would be self-sustainable, and it could be a form of reparations, and you would have the option to sell the land, to keep the land, to as income generating, or do whatever you want with the land, but, you know, basically establish a black land program, landowner program, to where anyone could opt in who qualifies. It would be very policy specific, and it would be very well funded. So, the black wealth agenda, the black education agenda, and a black healthcare agenda, focusing specifically on mental health. And it would be centered around those three issues of systemic change. And then, of course, criminal justice reform is important, but I think if the whole wealth education in healthcare issue, you're not going to have as many black folks in and out of the criminal justice system.
Now, you know, I'm going to go ahead and give my top three in there, because I kind of agree with both of you about it being, you know, and I'm not one to usually go and say that it needs to be radical. But in this case, I think just to get the ball started, we would have to go in there and go after those people who have had a track record of graft, those who have gotten rich off of being elected officials, but who have stayed in their communities but have not done anything to build those communities. All they've done is build a pocket. Go after them first. Those who made their money on the backs of our community, stole us down river. Because now I don't have any problem with anybody getting their money. It's about how you get it and then how you used it. You know, if you are an elected official who has constantly promised economic development to your community, this, that, and the other, but all the economic development in your community has went to three or four people, and all these three or four people can be found on a regular basis on your donor sheet, then we got a problem. You know, secondly, I agree with what John was saying about, you know, there being some type of land grant, a land grant, or because, you know, one of the things that we did in this country was doing the homestead, when they did the Homestead Act, when they opened up all this land and said, go get it. If you can get out there, if you can get to this spot and you can lay a claim, it is yours. Only thing that people had to do was have the ability to get there, and you've seen people take off and start walking. They didn't all have, you know, covered wagons. Some people walked. Now, we were not allowed to be a part of that process. And I think that was one of the things that held us back more than any redlining that was done, is that we were not allowed to take part in that great land grant. Now, that would possibly cause a lot of migration, because where's the land that we would give away? You know what I'm saying? Because I think on the east of the Mississippi, every damn thing has probably been claimed. But, you know, how does that happen? But I think it would be a good idea is to get incentives, not just for there to be home ownership, but land ownership. Because, see, home ownership is great and is a wonderful way for us to build wealth, but land does other things, because you can not just build a home on it, you can build businesses on it. You can raise crops on it. Like you said, if it was forest land, God, people do not understand how much the paper and lumber industry paid for people who have forest land. And again, when you talk about education, when we talk about education, we just can't be talking about four-year degrees. We also talk about trade, because a lot of us are not academic. A lot of us are really good with our hands. We just need to learn how to use the proper tools and learn the proper techniques of welding, pipe laying, you know, electrical work, you know, machining, doing machine tools, and just then, because there's a lot of money to be made out there if you know how to make a gear. And I see it every day in factories, that these guys that come in, they make $40, $50 an hour to fabricate a gear. They know how to take a raw slab of metal and make it into a gear that nobody makes in mass manufacturing processes anymore. And you can make plenty of money. And I've never seen, really, to be honest, in my many years in manufacturing, I've never seen an African American. Never. Never. I can't even count in my head of a black machine shop. If you exist, I need to know where you at. But those are the things I think, again, you know, get rid of those who we know who have participated in graft in our community, who've been a part of the corruption issue. You know, let's push wealth generation so we can close the gap and educate ourselves, not just academically, but when it comes to trades and actually, you know, doing the things that building, because book learning just ain't going to get it. We need people to build stuff. So that'll be my three. But this, I mean, I'm enjoying this conversation. I mean, I'm glad that, you know, particularly that in this particular space that we had some brothers come in, because a lot of times people don't get a chance to hear from us directly about how we feel about issues. You know, I love our sisters, you know, I enjoy engaging them in conversation, but it's very rare that we get an opportunity as black men in this space to just speak our piece out without having to have to temper our conversation. And I appreciate you brothers for calling in the Down South and Dirty. Is there anything that y'all, we got about 15 minutes left in the show. Is there anything that either one of you two brothers want to put out there that we might not have covered?
I just want to encourage people to pay attention to how many elections you have going on this year. Probably have multiple ones. I know we do here in Georgia. People in certain parts of Georgia may vote as many as six times this year because of all the runoff elections. Because our state does runoff. If nobody gets over, letting you know, there's always something on the ballot worth casting your vote for. Maybe you're not excited about the presidential race in November, but you know, maybe you have a competitive, you know, district attorney's race, or which is going to affect you in some way or another. Or maybe you have a sheriff's race that you need to turn out for. Do some research about what's on the ballot. I encourage you to do it. It's not just a presidential year. It's an election year, period.
Okay.
No, I just appreciate you for allowing me to be able to speak today. I just want us as black people to understand that, you know, we hold the power in this country and could change this country in whatever direction we would like to see it go. It takes us organizing. That's, you know, that's all we got to do. Like, the thing that won Obama was they organized. I worked for OFA in 2012, and I was able to see and be a part of such an organized effort. But that's organizing, actually getting out here and knocking on doors. And, you know, like, with who we have as a president in this country, we cannot afford to go back to Donald Trump. But we got to also recognize that this election is important, and we cannot afford to get it wrong. And I feel like the current path that we're on, with Joe Biden potentially picking up majority of the delegate counts on Super Tuesday in just a few days, I do think that, you know, we'll run into the same issue we did in 2016 with Joe Biden being essentially the very same candidate that Hillary Clinton was, and there's going to be a lot more stuff that we're going to figure out and find out about Joe Biden and his racist tactics and his racist sentiments and what his racist thoughts from back in the day. So I just want us to be very conscious of, you know, who we elect and, you know, where we're headed and what's going on in this country. And, you know, but just to organize, that's all I want us as black people to do. And also, as my brother said, you know, we got to focus on these down ballot candidates. I have a political strategy firm that's based here in Birmingham, Alabama, and that's all we do. My job is to go out here and different candidates that are running down ballot hire us to go out here and knock on doors with them, to phone bang with them, to lit drop with them, to put together any kind of operation. So we actually have teams of people out now knocking on doors and making phone calls, doing lit drops at churches, but in preparation for Tuesday. So I just want everybody to get out and vote on March 3rd if you live in a state that votes on Super Tuesday, and to just, you know, be well, you know, just know who your candidates are, know what the candidates are, know the issues. And again, like, let's look at the issues first. And I think we always go wrong by wanting to just elect somebody instead of figuring out, well, what are the issues that I really care about? And then looking at all the candidates and figuring out, based upon the candidates, which candidates best line up with what issues that I care about and who's more likely to support the most of my issues. But then after that, let's do some research. Let's see what this person has already done around those issues instead of just talking about them, because that's what we have to do. Because I think one big word that I use for us as black people, we're too gullible. And I'm a radical. My approach is to be radical in anything that I do. But I do believe that when it comes to certain things, especially in politics, especially in, you know, just what we know and how we move about, majority of black people are gullible. And we are very forgiving of other people. We're the quickest to forgive. We're the quickest to forget something, you know, that has happened to us. And it leaves us in a position of being too gullible when we don't have to, and we can be more forceful. And everything will change. But that also comes with us talking to our grandparents. We gotta let our grandparents know, hey, like, the generation, the future is on us, you know, and it's up to you all to support us and what we, you know, and who we say we need to support. Because, again, that's how we get Joe Biden, because our grandparents out here telling us stuff like, my vote is between me and the Lord, and I ain't telling nobody, and I'm going to go out here and vote. And look who they're voting for, Joe Biden, out of all people, you know. And so the person who voted for the 1994 crime bill, like, how is that helping us? So, but it just takes conversation and organizing. But again, thank you so much for your opportunity.
I appreciate you coming on the Down South and Dirty, and I hope that you continue to listen as we go through the rest of the season and in this political season, and hopefully hear from you again. And I appreciate you. And you keep holding down there in Alabama. And as he said, all of you who are voting on Super Tuesday. Be prepared to go out there, rain or shine, because the weather in the South is looking kind of weird that day. So get your umbrellas out, your raincoats. It is important that you do not let what's falling out of the sky stop you from going to go vote. Rain, sleet, snow, or shine, you need to go vote Super Tuesday. And I appreciate you for calling in, and y'all continue to do that great work over there in the state of Alabama. Okay. I had somebody that was listening in the background. I think I cut them out. Didn't mean to do that. So if you was that person that was listening in the background, then you know you can call back and finish, because it ain't but about 8 minutes left in the show. But let this be. So Super Tuesday is, again, this Tuesday coming up, March 3rd. If you live here in the state of Georgia, early voting starts tomorrow. Check your My Voter page, which is myvoter.gov, the GA.gov, state of Georgia. Check, or you just go Google My Voter page, and you can pull up the ballot in your local area. It will also pull up a schedule of your early voting hours and where your precincts are. And if you have Saturday or Sunday voting in your county. So I need you to go do that. Do that today. You know, it's past the deadline to register to vote for this presidential preference primary. But early voting starts for the presidential preference primary. I'm still undecided about who I'm voting for in the presidential preference primary. So these conversations are very important to me, because as I'm listening to different points of view, I'm not just voting for myself. I'm voting for my children who are unable to vote just yet. Now I have sons who are old enough to vote, and I've been talking to them about their voting plan. My youngest son just turned 18 in January. He's registered to vote. I'm planning on going to go vote with him with the presidential primary. I really hadn't talked to him about who he was voting for, but I really want to have, I think me and him need to have that conversation to kind of get an understanding of where his mind is at, because I want him to, you know, I want to understand his decision-making process. I don't want to tell him who to vote for. I just want to know how he's planning on voting. And we need to have our conversation with our young people, particularly if this is their first time out. You know, because this is a big responsibility for them. For a lot of them, this is the first adult thing they will do. It was a great conversation today. I was really appreciative that I had brothers that come on that wanted to talk about this issue, because I think sometimes people don't think that black men have an opinion about politics. And we are swing voters. And in major numbers. So, you know, we will go one way or the other real quick, like if it doesn't, if we don't think that who's ever on the ballot is going to support who we are as a people. So, again, early voting starts here tomorrow in Georgia. Super Tuesday's coming up, so if you're in a Super Tuesday state, remember you're voting on Tuesday. If you've not yet registered to vote, you still have time to register to vote for the May general primary here in Georgia. You still have time to vote for the general election in November. Go register to vote. It's going to make a difference. This year, it really does make a difference. Not only do we have, is it important, some of these down ballot races, particularly in Georgia when it comes to our legislative races, We have the census taking place this year. And after the census count taking place, there will be drawing of lines. The state legislature here in the state of Georgia draws the line of our districts. Who you'll be voting for in 2022 will be determined in 2021 based on the census being done this year in 2020. So it's important that we get people who will draw the lines fairly in 2021. So everybody remember, voting is very important. Think about who you are going to vote for. Vote your conscience. Vote for your community. This is Scout Smith. This is Down South and Dirty. Y'all hold it down.